everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we are having real talk with real leaders. I am absolutely thrilled today for the opportunity to break down hot topics with my new-ish friends. We'll get into that in a little bit. So as always, again, we are going to break down a hot topic to help you take your game to the next level, folks. Today's hot topic actually is on breaking down C-suite recruiting with two of the best in the business who also happen to be former collegiate athletes, which gave me the perfect opportunity to wear my leadership athlete t-shirt. They both definitely bear the mindset of the leadership athlete, which if you're new to this or you haven't heard me talk about it very much, we find a lot of times that people who are high-performing athletes, we can see it in how they're playing on the field, where they have that element of adaptability, resilience, coachability, commitment to something bigger than just them. So those type of things are what I'm talking about. And as you listen to this, folks, you will hear and see that, I think, in our guests, Vicky and Matt today. So with that, I think I'm actually going to start to give a little bit of insight into our guests today. So we've got Vicky Wilkins, Chief Commercial Officer, and we've got Matt Mooney, who is a partner. They both work for their recruiting firm, On Partners. And On Partners is actually in the Forbes and Inc. 5000 executive search firm in America, doing big things with a big firm. So thank you both. Thank you for letting me kind of drone on a little bit there with the introduction. But thanks so much for joining.
Thanks for having us, Shauna. We're excited.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Matt, I know you jumped in a little last minute, which was a great example of Vicky being such a great team player, where you said to me, hey, let's get Matt in here, because I think we can really answer some of this together. So again, that's a really great example of the way that you operate. So folks, I don't usually look at my notes and give all the kind of bragging about my guests, but I'm going to do this on their behalf simply to show you the impact that my guests are having, not only in the business with their clients, with candidates, but also in their communities, because I think that is part of what makes them tick. And I find that often with, again, this leadership athlete mindset really is thinking beyond just you. So Vicky is a three-time global brand executive, founding member of The Post, which we'll talk about a bit later, folks, executive advisory board member of AMA Atlanta, founding member of Women's Purpose Community, chapter leader at Onward Women, and you went to the University of Michigan, and you were a varsity soccer player. Four-year starter. When I read that, I was like, wow, folks, four-year starter is a big deal. And you're a Big Ten all-academic recipient. Yes, go blue. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
And folks, if you don't know this about me, I went to University of Michigan and played basketball. So that was one of the things that Vicky and I realized that we had in common right away, other than having bangs, because we both
bangs. Drew us together.
Exactly. And Matt, So Matt, you have been in the search business for over 30 years. What I read up on you, you've completed over 500 board and senior executive search assignments for both the public and private sectors across your career. Before you were at On Partners, I have down here that you consulted with Russell Reynolds Association, Korn Ferry International, Ray and Bernstein.
Yep, Ray and Berenson. Yeah, that's right.
And then you had your own firm that you started, MPI Eden. And then here's a look at you kind of on the outside of this work world that you've had such an impact on, is chair of National Board of Directors for Arthritis Foundation. And you've been on that executive committee since 2014. So that's pretty remarkable. Yeah. And you too are a founding member of The Post. So you both are... I appreciate when we first met, your authenticity came through right away, your camaraderie with each other, and then instantly with me. And it's so cool to see all the stuff you've done. And Matt, you also, can't leave this out, you were a football player, varsity football player at TCU, Texas
Christian. Go Frogs, right. Go Frogs, yeah.
But we'll let you get away with that one.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. It's not too soon. We won national championship.
That's right. But yeah. You wouldn't have won the national championship without losing to TCU in the Fiesta Bowl. You wouldn't have gone on to, wouldn't given you the drive and the energy to go win the national championship. So it worked out.
We thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So you both are just remarkable, and I would love for you to give a little bit of each one of you about how have you gone from killing it on the field of play to killing it in business in the best of ways. So if you can talk to us a little bit about your journeys and how you got to On Partners and what you're doing there.
You want to go first, Matt?
Sure, I'll take a cut. Look, I mean, I think, you know, we talk a lot about internally, I think out in the market with the Post, with a lot of these initiatives, kind of this built by sport concept, you touched on it right out of the gate. Those lessons you learn on the field, resilience, work ethic, how to overcome adversity, I think those are woven into who we are and what makes us tick. So I think that's been a big part of what has made certainly us successful as individuals, us successful collectively. There's just a mindset and a DNA to that. Again, whether it's a little smack talk, kind of ribbing each other here, we want to win, right? We always want to win. There's a drive, there's a competitiveness that comes through anytime we step into the arena, whatever that may be. So I think that's a big part of it. For me, getting into the retained executive search industry, it'll be 32 years in January. The big thing for me, it was a phenomenal outlet for me to think creatively, to solve problems, to be competitive. It's a challenge. In some ways, you're your only limitation, whatever you're doing in this industry. It's really about your ability to develop relationships, your ability to be credible, your ability to solve problems both for candidates and clients. And that's a big part. And so the parallels between the DNA of sport and how we grew up and what formed us, it's for me, it's a perfect outlet to do that. So 32 years in, I'm having a blast and can't imagine doing anything else.
That's so awesome. And I love the way you talked about it because it was very much that sense of competing with yourself to be better than you were every yesterday. I love that you use that reference. And your role there very much is leading as your partner in the firm and leading in your recruiting on a daily basis, right?
Yep, absolutely. Look, I mean, our job, obviously, helping to drive the firm, helping to develop people, helping to coach and mentor and do all those things internally. But the reason for being is our ability to work with companies, work with boards of directors, work with investors. They come to us because they have a problem. Either they're growing too fast and they've outstripped capability, they've hit headwinds, they're on a downturn, they're in some level of growth or transition or disruption. They need a new management team. They need new leaders. They need new executives. And sometimes it's very straightforward, very cut and dry. Sometimes there's a broader conversation around organizational design, market dynamics, the value we add well beyond just putting somebody in a box on an org chart. And that's back to that problem solving, back to that consultative element of who we are and what we do and what makes us successful. That's what's fulfilling. That's what's rewarding for us.
Tell us about you, Vicky. Tell us your journey to get there, because you have a slightly different role within the organization.
Yeah.
Not focused on the recruiting side of it.
I think, Shauna, you and I are actually really similar in terms of our journeys. So, I mean, I grew up playing, we're both from Houston, Matt and I are both actually from Houston, Texas. I grew up playing soccer, and I think it was less about the sport, and it was more about the competition and the challenge of it. And when I really look back, like the adrenaline and the energy of what sport gives you. And so I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I feel like a lot of former athletes can. When you graduate college and that's done, right? There's this like whole identity crisis that like sort of manifests itself because you're so used to that being your outlet. That's the way that you kind of went through life, as well as that being your identity, right? And so I think Shauna, similar to you, I went straight to sports, right? So I interned at Nike, then I went into Turner Sports and worked on the NBA and stayed in sports for the first, I don't know, you know, 10 years of my career from a sports marketing perspective, because I love the audience. Like the audience, like there's no better audience than the sports audience, right? Whether it's participatory or whether it's truly from a consumer perspective, it's just, there's no better loyalty than the sports audience. So what I ended up doing was I moved from sports marketing stayed with consumer marketing, but moved to Atlanta and went to the Weather Channel, which I remember at the time they were like, well, it's kind of like sports because it's, you know, it's outside and then like sports people need the weather. But it was my first non-sports related job. And what I'll say from that is I think like the journey from playing to working, right? And building your career. The one thing that I felt like I struggled the most with was, you know, when you're playing a sport, you don't have to talk. It's just action, right? You're just proving your worth, your value, your challenge to yourself and to others through your actions and your hard work, right? And then you get to business and it's all about how you position yourself and how you're perceived and what you're doing. And it's less about the action. And I remember thinking, God, how do I make this transition, right? I'm used to, you know, people will see my value if I'm just working hard enough, right? They'll see it. And that's true. But I think one of the biggest lessons from an athlete to an executive is really kind of truly learning how to like sort of reposition yourself in a way and really work with individuals in a totally different dynamic than a very action-oriented dynamic such as sports. So I think that's like that was the biggest like aha for me. What I got out of sports that I feel like carries through to Matt's point at On Partners and in our careers is just resiliency. Like straight out, know how to fail, know how to get back up. I think that's like the most important lesson. The second lesson to me is, you know, you touched on it, is teamwork and collaboration. Like you know how to work with others and you know how to fail and succeed with others.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought both of those things up, actually, the part about that identity crisis, because I had it when I stopped playing basketball and then I started running cross country in grad school, but I stopped playing. And so I started having that identity crisis then. But then to your point, I was like, oh, I'll go work in basketball. Somehow found a way to go work in it. So I still thought I was close to the game, still found identity through that. So it wasn't, then I faced it again in probably the biggest way when I then went to the agency side and there was no ball bouncing anywhere around me. So it's a really great point. And I was actually thinking of it as I was preparing for this, because I actually think it happens a lot in business too. Whatever role it is, we can identify with it. I used to walk into rooms and I'm Shauna and I work for the New Jersey Nets. And I didn't mean it like I was bragging. One, I was proud of it, but it was just a testament to me feeling like that was my belonging. And so I think it can happen in business when we get these roles and they're high profile or whatever, or, you know, these executive level roles. And then if something changes, we lose the job, we go on to something new, I still think there can be that feeling of loss of identity. So I'm curious, like, do you see that in the business side?
I think even just hearing the two of you talk, we're wired to be teammates and we're wired to compete. I mean, those are just two things that I hadn't thought of it in that way, but that's very much who we are. And you're going to find either a positive or a negative outlet for that competition, for that drive. And again, we all long for and hunger that camaraderie of the locker room, the teammates, the people that make you better, that elevate you, you help elevate them. I think that's, and so I think, you know, in the business world, the rules are a little bit different. To Vicky's point, you can talk big on and off the field, but just like on the field, you've got to back it up. You can bring the bravado, maybe not to the same level or maybe not with the same language, but you have to back it up at some level. So I think there are absolutely parallels on the business side. I think it's harder for people to identify. You run into a lot of people who aren't team players, who don't have that same value system, that same drive. And I think that makes it challenging for a lot of athletes because, hey, I expect you to pick up the slack. I expect you to support me and to back me up and to all work towards the same directive and the same initiative. And sometimes you don't see that. So it can be frustrating, I think, for people like us that grew up in this environment where, hey, I've got your back and you've got mine. And we know that we're all working towards the same shared goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. When Shauna, we work with a lot of former athletes who are now, you know, we place C-level and board members and SVPs. So there's a lot of former athletes going in those roles. And I think what you see a lot, and I know we all three have experienced it, is you can get your value out of your title. You know, like the reason you like saying, hey, I work for the Jets and you know, I'm this, or the reason I like saying I interned at Nike, or I'm working at the NBA. Like because in some ways it's like, that's where we're getting some of the value at the beginning coming into our career. And so I do think, like, I think a lot of athletes turned executives do start to turn their careers into kind of that trophy case. Some, a lot, because we're competitive and we're hardworking, but also because, like, that, you know, that makes us feel like we're accomplishing something and we're doing something big, because we're used to doing big things, you know, like, I think every athlete experiences this, where you go out of your sport and then you play co-ed sports in that, right? Or you, like, you go to the gym and you play your sport in the gym and you're like, oh, this is like nothing like what it was. And it's almost kind of depressing. I think you have to kind of make that transition. I definitely would say the executives that we work with, right, and placing these, you can spot them because of exactly what Matt was saying, in terms of just there's a commitment, I think, to, like, what they're accomplishing. There's a mentality and a work ethic that I think is really big. And there's also a resiliency. Again, I think that resiliency is always sort of like the key indicators to me when you're really looking at athletes coming into the business world.
Yeah, such great points. And when you said earlier, I think you were totally right about the being able to get back down to, you know how to win, you know how to lose. I was actually talking to my niece about this during this trip here to Michigan last weekend, and she plays field hockey at James Madison. And I was talking to her about the translation of her sports as she's looking at what she'll do next and applying for school, her grad school and stuff. And I actually said to her that she also knows how to learn from the wins, learn from the losses. And I think that that's a way that I think that she can talk to, just take that to another level with people. Not only do I know how to rally my team, but when we win, I can spot we did this well, or we didn't. Too many times I see in business people, they'll celebrate the wins and they're just trying to recover from the losses and keep it moving. And I think in both instances, there's so much learning to be had. I'm not unique in saying that, but I think it's just fitting this context.
I think that's a really good point. You know, Matt and I both have daughters, and my daughters are in club soccer, and they're not in club soccer because I'm like, oh, like, let's go get the scholarship. They're in club soccer because I want them to learn some basic tenets that sports provide you, right? One, teamwork, collaboration, and I want them to learn how to fail. And I would say the other thing that kind of goes with your point is I want them to learn how to be brave. I really want them to learn how to be brave, especially our girls. Right. Especially our girls. And I think that, like, if they can grab those kind of characteristics and move them into whatever career they go into or wherever life, you know, leads them, I'll consider that a success in sports.
Be bold, have fun. If you can do that in sport and in life, you're going to turn out okay.
Dude, and if people listening to this, they're like, well, I wasn't an athlete, and does this still relate to me? I actually think to have this mindset, you don't have to have been an athlete. You could be an avid fan so that you're close enough to see it on the field of play for other people. You could be a Boy Scout, an Eagle Scout. There are other things. You could be a ballerina. It could be the way they were raised. It's part of the mindset and the sort of coaching, air quotes, that comes from their family. So I just pause on that, because in this leadership athlete mindset, the mindset we're talking about, the things that you bring to that C-suite level role that can make you really compelling, these are characteristics that I think are actually accessible to across the board. And the reason why I talk about it like this a lot of times is because sometimes this actually makes it easier for people to go, now I think I know what they're looking for. I have that. But again, it's those things that they're signals to you that they have these traits, these qualities and characteristics that you're talking about.
Yeah. I know this is one of your questions to us, but, like, from a trends perspective and executive recruiting, what are we seeing? And go at a higher macro level, the way to assess individuals on those soft skills, right, on those characteristics and the type of the soft skills that you're really looking for in leadership, right? So I think that's a huge, as we move into the world of AI and tech enabled, there's so many parts of recruiting that are automated in some ways now. But the one part that continues to be a really interesting piece that's in high demand, like we hear it, Matt and I hear it all the time, is just like, how do we know this is the right leader? How do we know this is the right leader who's going to fit into this particular culture, into this organization? And how do we assess that in a way that we feel confident in this investment because it's a big investment. And so I just went to HR tech and everywhere it was like skills-based assessment. Everyone was talking about like, how do you assess the soft skills, the characteristics, the attributes? And there's 8 billion different solutions to this, right? But I don't know if anyone's really, truly, really figured that out, right? And so that's where we come in a lot of the times. How are you truly understanding, based off of your needs, what is the right leader? And is that leader going to be who you need based off the team you have and the role that you're filling?
I really appreciate you bringing that to it, because I think a part of what I want to talk about today is from the candidate perspective and the client perspective, how best should they work with you to set themselves up for success in both? How should they think about what you just said about that they're assessing me when they're working with a recruiter, and help that recruiter figure out how to talk about them, how to pull out some of those soft skills?
Yeah, it's interesting. We start off with, we always joke that, hey, everything is a test. Every part of this engagement, interaction, discussion is part of the test. How do you answer the question? How do you react to being asked the question? And so I think for candidates to really embrace the process, to be open to looking in the mirror, part of this whole assessment process is, hey, you want to go through an assessment in whatever form it takes and be able to look at it at the end of the day and say, okay, yeah, that sort of sounds like me. I may disagree on a couple pieces on the edges, but generally, hey, this is me, and I'm self-aware enough to recognize that. So I think that, just being vulnerable, being able to kind of let your guard down a little bit, show some degree of humility and engage with that process, I think that's a big part of it. You don't want to kind of build yourself into something you're not. You don't want to step into an environment or a role or a situation that's not going to play to your strength. So I think that level of humility, that level of honesty, and then just, really actively engage the process. That's the biggest part of it. We go into these things, we don't know if you're the perfect fit. Sometimes part of our job is to rule out maybe why you're not the perfect fit. And let's look at some of these derailers or things that would essentially disqualify you. And if you have the right skills, the right competency, the right experience, if it's a culture fit, and if from an assessment and referencing and interview perspective, all these things align, hey, you know what? You might be the right fit. And we work through that process, both with the candidates and the clients, to get to that stage. But you can't get there if you don't let the guard down, if you don't just embrace the process and say, hey, I'm willing to engage, invest time and energy and emotional capital. I have no idea where it's going to end up, but that's okay. And you're going to learn from it. You're going to be better for it either way.
Yeah, it's the assessment thing. You both have been, aware of the assessment tool that I use, the GC Index, and the coaching work and the consulting work. So I can just say from my perspective and coaching people and working with companies that it really does help, to your point, learn new language for how to talk about yourself. Again, it does give us an opportunity to find new language, to use that recruiter almost like a partner in it, to learn through the process. And I said that earlier about learning. I think when you're in the process, a lot of times you're just looking for like to get that job. The company's just looking to get, to get that hire in the door and have it be. But again, there's so much I think that can be revealed in the process. We really can discover new ways. And that's why I love the GC Index, is I think it just helps bring new language to people for how to talk about themselves, organizations to better understand, to your point, like what's the makeup of that leadership team.
The GC Index, obviously we've taken it, and it's eye open. And I've taken, I don't know, a dozen assessments in my time, right? Yeah. And they all provide a different level of value, right? It depends on what you're hoping to solve or answer. But specifically the GC Index, I thought was a really good eye-opening experience for me to take, because your assessments are, they're evolving, right? Because you're evolving. So like what you would have seen my assessment 10 years ago to what you saw my assessment in the GC Index, I mean, vastly different than what it would have been, because it's like where I am today as a leader and as an executive and what I've learned, right? And what I care about most. So I think the ability to, as we're working with clients too, the ability to truly kind of understand the team that they're coming into and where their mindset is and their awareness is on themselves to the person that you're looking to bring in as a leader is also really important, a really important piece to that puzzle.
And I would say both from a candidate perspective and a client perspective, assessments are funny in some ways. Candidates can sometimes look at it with levels of trepidation, like, oh, hey, I don't want you assessing me or figuring out what really makes me tick. So it's funny when you find these pockets of really successful executives that have had phenomenal careers who just will freeze up when you talk about going to do an assessment. And on the flip side, you'll have clients that absolutely use it the right way. And as one factor and one piece of the overall puzzle, you still see some clients who view it as this kind of binary pass fail element, not an assessment tool, not a success. How do we best onboard and assimilate and add value throughout the hiring and the management process? So it is, I mean, there's probably rightfully some concern about how companies use these tools, and the best companies figure out they embrace one of the tools. They build a great baseline of, hey, successful people at our company tend to look like this and tend to assess this way and score certain ways. So you'll find the people that use it the right way. It's a valuable tool, and it makes a difference not only in hiring and onboarding, but overall performance over the coming years.
That's a great point. I said when we started this that I was going to ask you kind of the debunking question that I get a lot. I have a lot of friends who are in the C-suite level, and I think there's a lot of, call it fear or perception, that C-suite full-time roles are starting to not become the norm, starting to go away. People are saying everything's turning fractional. So you all are on the front lines. Tell us what you're seeing. Is that true?
It's kind of a two-part answer. I would say, I mean, there is absolutely enormous demand for experienced executives that can help companies navigate through wherever these current market conditions are. They're, you know, 100%. There are more opportunities out there than there are qualified executives to step into these roles. We, you know, that's why we're here. That's why we do well in disruptive markets. But on the flip side, I think the trade-off, and maybe what ties into part of your observation, there used to be a stigma. If 20 years ago, if I said, hey, I'm going to punch out of my full-time 9-to-5 or whatever daily job, kind of traditional W-2 employee, and I'm going to go do this portfolio approach, maybe take a couple consulting assignments, do a little bit of board work and things like that, people would have looked at me absolutely sideways and say, hey, what in the world's wrong with Matt? What's he doing? And somewhere, even pre-COVID, somewhere over the last decade, there's been this decoupling where, hey, you know what? If you want to go do, first, if you want to go sail around the world for the next 365 days, you're the most interesting, deepest person we've ever met. And so the pendulum has swung 180 degrees. But I think there is this receptivity to this portfolio approach where, hey, I'm going to go do some not-for-profit. I'm going to go donate and do some charity work here. I'm going to go do some consulting off and on and do 10 hours a month to these couple different things. I'm going to sit on this board. And there's just zero stigma around that. And probably the weirder, the better, if anything. You get bonus points for things that are weird and different. And so I think that's good. It's good for society. It's good for the overall business economy, because you're still tapping into people that maybe would have checked out and would have unplugged completely. So there, you know, clearly no shortage of opportunities overall out in the market, but if you choose to do something different, man, go for it. I think there are plenty of opportunities to kind of create this portfolio or a la carte approach that's going to keep you more than busy.
So, Shauna, because I'm assuming like a lot of this is like agency friends too, or yeah. So I haven't been an executive search as long as Matt, right? I came in, Matt actually brought me in 6 years ago, and it was really more about branding and marketing than it was about it being executive search. And so I've slowly assimilated it in. I've never had an inside view of executive search. And the one thing I would add to kind of the whole idea is we can get really stuck in like our echo chambers of our industries and sectors. I know for myself, coming from sports, tech, media, it's like, you know, they're like little pockets. And one thing that I really like about being an executive search, and I would highly recommend any candidates who are talking to recruiters to think of it this way. People like Matt have a really interesting view of cross-industry perspectives, right? They have a really interesting view of demand for executives across different bubbles that exist. And they're a wealth of knowledge. They're an absolute wealth of knowledge. I wish I had known this when I was talking to recruiters, you know, 10 years ago, that they're a total wealth of knowledge in terms of like, what is happening in the market? What are what are CEOs looking for? What is the change, to Matt's point, of how we would have brought a leader in today versus maybe, you know, 10 years ago? And so really tapping into executive recruiters for sort of that market map, that market understanding, I think is important. And also tapping in, if you do feel like you're kind of getting the same sort of story in the industry, trying to understand sort of what's that like in adjacent sector or an adjacent industry, to really kind of broaden your horizon a little bit of, is that just us or is that happening in other places too? I think that's the beauty of executive search that I know I've really gleaned a lot of understanding from that I didn't really know when I was a candidate or a client.
And that's one thing I think, even as Vicky's come on board and provided some of that outside perspective, I think we realized somewhere along the way, hey, we do have some great insights. We do have this phenomenal market intelligence and data that we take for granted, because we do have so many conversations every day, every week with investors and board members and senior executives. So we get a perspective that most people don't.
Yeah, you're very privy to information that, like, you forget that. I had to tell them, I was like, not most people are having 5 conversations in that form, you know, the way you guys are. It's a real gift, and it's interesting data that can be valuable for those looking for a job.
And whether it's candidates or clients, people tell us everything. We're kind of this Switzerland that sits in the middle. It's this trusted advisor, and people give us enormous amounts of insight and data every day, every conversation. So that's a big part of what we do. And it is value. It's valuable to us. It's valuable to the firm. And it's certainly valuable to the broader market.
That really stood out to me, Vicky. You said a little bit of that in one of our first conversations post-meeting at the summit. And it stood out to me so much. And I pause on it because those people who are listening, I think it further confirms the notion of partner with the executive search firm, whether you're the company or you're the candidate, view that person as your partner in this to seek information. Like, at the end of the day, in your roles in the recruiting side, you are looking for the best fit, which is for both sides. So, you know, I think, again, so many people, I hear candidates say that recruiter is just trying to fill a hole. They don't really care about me and that kind of thing. But I think if we challenge ourselves, to your point about have some courage in how we're going to actually approach the relationship and understand that it's in everybody's best interest to get the best fit. There's no benefit to anybody to putting in a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. You know, I think I said this coming in into my first kind of brand work for On Partners, is this is a transactionally perceived business. You know, like, however you want to say you're building a deep relationship, like, at the end of the day, people perceive it as a transaction, because at the end of the day, it is a transaction, right? It's a human capital business. You know, on the side of the candidate, to your point, Sean, it's how do you leverage it for your benefit? Right. And so I hear a lot of people say, oh, you know, I didn't take that call with that recruiter because I don't want that particular job. And you're like, no, like, take every call, because what you're telling, that is an opportunity to, one, tell your story, and two, tell them what you want. Right. Because odds are it's not going to be that you're going to get next. Right. Like, there's statistically, that might not be the right one, but 3 years down the road, 2 years down the road, 1 year down the road, you know, you can come back and say, I know you needed that. Now I've got the role that we're looking for. And you know, I think you're a good fit. So it's just leverage that relationship and use it for to your point, you're approaching it just as a transactional.
Yeah.
And that, you know, from where I sit, if you're going to do this for 2 or 3 decades, you want to be in a position where you are a good sounding board. I have a lot of friends around the industry who will call me, senior executives, and say, hey, I'm looking at the CEO role. What do you think about the company? What do you think about the investors? Here's what they offered me. Here's the comp package. Here's the equity package. And those are, you know, again, we're not involved in the search, but they're reaching out to us as a good sounding board, somebody they know and trust and know that we have unique insights. So I think, to Vicky's point, develop relationships with people in the executive search community. It's a great benefit. It's a benefit to us. I mean, a lot of that market insight and data we get is having conversations with people every day. Even if you're not interested, I would say one thing I would say is at least respond. Respond back. If we reach out to you, hey, we're working on this really cool CEO role. We'd love your insight. No, you don't have to engage in the process, but at least respond back, hey, I'm locked in here for the next 2 years, or I'm not available because of, okay, great. You know, we track all that. We keep tabs on that. We also kind of put you on the good list. Hey, this is somebody who's engaged and responsive, and you can't ghost us for 8 years and then come to us when you're looking for a job. You're not going to be on the same level. We want to have kind of this long, even though, you know, there are elements that are inherently transactional. We want to have connections. We want to have these relationships in this community out in the broader market, because again, it's good for the candidates, it's good for us, and it's good for our clients as well.
Great points. Relationships matter. Relationships matter. And if you're not the right person for the role, perhaps you know someone who is. So
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Keep the goodness going. So another thing I want to get your input on, a debunking thing, is our resumes passé. I'd love to hear from you sort of the state of resumes. What's going on out there and how should we think about them? For both the candidate and the company to know.
I think it's still real, just, you know, the same way we write job descriptions on companies and roles. But I think the resume, maybe I'm old school, I think it's still going to play a role. Your LinkedIn profile, very important. That's kind of your signpost to the world. Here's who I am and where I've been and what I've done. But I think having a resume that articulates, maybe goes a little bit deeper, provides more insight and more direction, most of our clients are still going to ask for that. And I think there's also, back to this trust, back to this relationship part of it. If I call you and talk about, hey, I'm working on this really interesting chief marketing search, I'm going to share a job spec, I'd love your insight, kind of is this quid pro quo, you're going to send back a resume, we're going to talk through that, we're going to use that as a guide as we do the interview, as we introduce you to the client. And there's just, you know, an element of trust and back and forth, and again, vulnerability that allows you to put that across. So, you know, I think resumes are going to be here. I would say don't overthink it. I don't need a 10-page mission statement right on the front. You can get back to, hey, where have you been? What have you done? What were the results? Give me some metrics, people, revenues, whatever it may be. I think that's the most important. If you can get it 2-3 pages, that's fine. But I think just showing that you've put some thought into it, this is a good time of year. Everybody, end of the year, beginning of the year, dust off an old resume, refresh it, put some things in there. It's a good exercise. You know, ideally, you have somebody calling you in January with a great opportunity, and you've got it at least somewhat up to date.
I would add, and I think it's less about like the resume being irrelevant. It's more about there's other things you now have to keep up to date too. You are not wholly just completely reliant on just the resume, because, you know, when we're working with clients, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to look at your LinkedIn. Depending on where they're looking for you, all of that, the perception you build about yourself, the story you build around yourself, the brand you build, which is the hardest thing to do, right, is to position yourself. That's so hard. And I'm a marketer and I find it like horribly hard. But that make sure that your digital footprint on yourself, whether that's LinkedIn, actually, whatever it is consistent to who you are and how you want to be perceived, and the value that, you know, you bring as a leader. So yeah, the resume will be there, but there's going to be 5 other ways to understand you too. I think that's more of the case.
Yeah, look, I think that's a great point. You know, if I'm referred to you and I pull you up on LinkedIn, you've got no picture, skinny background, 15 connections, we're going to look a little sideways at you. That's just, and then if you've got some crazy Instagram or some social media thing with 1,000 crazy rants, yeah, we're going to judge you harshly on that as well. So yeah, I think LinkedIn is a great one. It's an important part of just projecting who you are to the community. And that's, you know, again, there's value there that you're going to want to take advantage of.
That's a great point. And there's times that, you know, we have to check ourselves. So for me, for the longest time, because I was kind of wanting to, I don't know, be a free bird, free spirit type thing, I had a photo in like a helmet and glasses from riding bikes on my LinkedIn. And I was like, okay, I'm getting in my own way. That's not very helpful. No, it's like that we talked earlier about self-awareness. So I think the degree to which we can lean on others and say, hey, give me some input, learn from others. But Matt, you said it, there's a degree to which we have to look at ourselves. I can't actually remember which one of you said it, but we have to look at ourselves in the process and be like, okay, wait, where do I need to tweak some things? Where do I need to learn and, you know, up my own game type thing? So,
yeah. And it totally depends on the role you want, right? So like that headshot might've worked really great. If any of the motorcycle companies were coming around looking for leaders, right? So it just depends. So I think there is, the last thing you would want is someone to not be authentic to who they are by any means. But there's like, to Matt's point, there's a reality and a balance to your branding. You know, you brand yourself, you position yourself to the role you want to have.
Yeah.
And if that's, you want to work at the motorcycle company and that's like your passion, great, then show your passion. I find that a lot of people get really, and I myself included, when I've been in the job search process, well, I don't want to narrow myself too much, right? I don't want to narrow myself too much because like I could go work over there, but I could also go work over there and I don't want to narrow myself. And my advice always is say what you want. Say what you want. That's the easiest thing. And especially when you're talking to a recruiter, say what you want. You've got an opportunity to do that on multiple different platforms and not just a resume anymore. So like make it clear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I often say like, help the person to help you. And sometimes if you don't quite know, go as close as you can to what you think. And then again, in the process, maybe you ask a question that helps to narrow down what you're looking for. But these are really great points. And I'm so glad you said the thing about authenticity, because it really is true. Like that comes through. And Matt, what you said earlier, you don't want to place somebody who's not the authentic fit. You don't, and it's not a performative thing, you know? So I'm really glad that you said that part.
Authentic really jumps out. Inauthentic comes out twice as loud. And it's just as unsettling. It's not a good look.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, one thing that we've heard just in the last like 2 years, because we do a lot of work in private equity. So this is like a good example of it is starting to look for and assess more for humility, right? And it's like, okay, well, how do you understand humility? How do you understand if that person's gonna be humble or not? Because you have to get to a point where, you know, in the private equity side, like, hey, if things aren't going okay, we don't have enough time for them not to, you know, like someone's got to raise their hand and say it's not okay and I need help, right? And so like, how do you kind of, in the authentic stuff, like, right, how can you portray something like humility, right? And so I think things like that are important, both from resumes. So like, you know, these are the facts, but in other places that you're able to be discovered, like, you know, lean into the characteristics that you have as your strengths.
And as athletes, we're not always taught humility, right?
Well, I mean, we get humbled all the time.
The game will teach you humility.
I feel like the game teaches you humility big time.
Yeah.
We're learning humility in our Michigan season, you know?
There, yeah.
Except for last week.
Except for last week, I know, right?
You saved.
It's been so great chatting with you both and really getting that inside look at the industry. Before I let you go, I want to do a couple things. One is to just shout out The Post, which is a membership group of former athletes, is where we met at this annual summit. I just love it. I love the like-mindedness, and I'm so grateful that we met there. Thanks for coming up and chatting about bangs and U of M with me. And then the last thing, I think you really gave us a look at the both of you, which is probably a sort of a reflection of your organization and the other people. So people hearing this and they're interested in becoming a client of yours, where do you think people should look, or can they reach out to you directly?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, hit us up on LinkedIn. That's always a good start. Look, the element of who we are is connecting with people, meeting people, finding opportunities to kind of piece this world together. So We can't do what we do without knowing a lot of really great, talented people. So we want to expand that community as much as possible. And so, yeah, absolutely. Reach out to us on LinkedIn and make that connection. We'd love to continue the dialogue.
Yeah. I just had one more thing, just a shout out to Christian Ponder and Jason LaRose for starting The Post, because it is a fantastic community and we get to meet people like Shauna and others. And it's, we love the network. So
yeah. Built by sport. It's real. It's absolutely real. And you could feel that at the summit. You could feel that sense of teamwork and camaraderie, and you're back in just all the positive aspects of the locker room once again.
Absolutely. I love that. I've been talking a lot lately about leadership as a sport and the sport of leadership, the two things that are very hand in hand with that same topic. So thank you again so much. I appreciate your time, all that you shared with us today. Folks, I hope that you enjoyed, and please do hit up Vicky and Matt. I will post links and hopefully you'll start some conversations.
Thanks, Shauna.
Excellent. Love it. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.